Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hey guys, I'm Emmanuel Williams, and you're listening to Impact Outdoors. So I know a lot of people ask me just, how do I do what I do? And honestly, I wouldn't say, I definitely planned. I've always wanted, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, I'd love to be a huge YouTuber. You know what I mean? But until I really found something that I liked, and being consistent wasn't a problem. Being passionate wasn't a problem. I'm not trying to find content. I'm not like trying to create moments to make content. You know, I'm just, everything you see is just, you know what I mean? So I would say that would be my main advice, is find something that you're passionate about, that you actually love. Don't do stuff for views, do stuff because you actually like it, and the rest will come together.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning back in for another episode of Impact Outdoors this week. And man, we've got a really cool guest on the show this time, and I met this guy over at ICAST this summer and been following along on his videos and stuff he posts, fishing over in Florida in the Miami area and all the trips he does out on his jet ski. I've got Emmanuel Williams with I Belong Outdoors on the show, and we had a great conversation about kind of Emmanuel's start into fishing at a young age and how that's kind of evolved into what he's doing today, growing his brand and his YouTube channel and all the great stuff he does. He does a lot of cool types of fishing offshore, and we talk about a lot of that, and because I'm all into offshore fishing and over here in Texas, and love chatting with them about the differences in the Gulf and the fishing over in the Atlantic and down in the Keys and all that stuff. So it was a lot of fun for me to have Emmanuel on the show, and hope you really enjoy this one. I'll be posting some great video links of some stuff he's done on the show notes, so be sure and check those out and follow him along to get some really cool content. And let's go ahead and jump right into this week's episode with Emmanuel Williams. I'm super excited for this week's show. We've got my buddy Emmanuel Williams from down near Miami, right, in Florida. So yes, welcome, sir. Welcome to the show, man. How you been?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we got to connect a little bit at ICAST this summer. And got to meet. I've been following you for a while on Instagram. That's where I first spotted some of your stuff on there. And pretty unique niche you've carved out for yourself in the fishing industry, man. So
yeah,
why don't you tell us a little bit kind of about that, and kind of about your background growing up and stuff. And you know, I know you're very passionate about fishing, and every video I see, you're so happy and just so excited to be doing what you're doing, and it's a blessing, and for you and for the people that watched your videos and stuff. So kind of give us the rundown on Emmanuel Williams.
So I fish on a Sea-Doo. I wouldn't say it's new. I would say kind of over here in America it's new, but I know in Hawaii and Australia, it's something they've been doing for years. So I saw videos maybe about like 5 years ago of some dude fishing on sea-doos over in Australia. And I was like, man, it's a little sea-doo. You could get in tight spots. You could still go far offshore. You could still catch fish. Then I was like, man, here in Florida, it's perfect because the edge here is about 5 miles. Anywhere from like 3 to 5 miles, I'm in anywhere from 100 to like 300 feet of water. You know what I mean?
You're very
I was like,
spoiled.
man. Yeah, I know over
It's
there
80
in Texas,
miles from Galveston to
yeah.
get to the shelf, so.
Exactly. So I was like, man, this is perfect for Florida. And I kind of just bought my first Sea-Doo. It was a Sea-Doo Spark, not made for fishing. Just a small model. I rigged it up, put a cooler on it. Made a rack for it, just went out there with my rod holders, and over time just kept fishing, kept trying new things. Eventually over time grew a bigger platform, leveled up to the bigger Fish Pro, which is Sea-Doo's like all out fishing model, and kind of just like how it happened. I grew up fishing with my dad, but we do a lot of land-based stuff like on bridges and piers and stuff like that. But I was just always itching to get offshore and catch a big fish, so that's where the Sea-Doo came in.
So like what's your earliest memory of being out with your dad fishing and stuff? 'Cause I mean
Oh
that's
man, like maybe when I was like 7 or 8 years old, we would always go down to the pier here, Dania Pier. And we just, hang out on the pier all day, put out baits, catching king mackerels, catching bonitas, stuff like that at the pier. Super young. Honestly, I can't even put an age on it.
That's cool though, man. I mean, those are memories that last you forever and really spark a lot of things.
For
Obviously for
sure.
you know, with what you're doing and stuff. When did you like you've been fishing, since you were real little and stuff. Where did the idea come to start like documenting this stuff? Because there's a lot of people, I mean, as well as I do, there's so many people on social media now making videos and putting stuff up on YouTube, and it's really become the thing here in the last 5 years. And it's just
Yeah,
exploded in the outdoors industry and stuff. But
for sure.
yours, yours are a little bit different than a lot of people. I mean, I've talked to, I don't know, I've interviewed Emily and Amanda Gale and from the Gale Force Twins, and they're kind of over there
Okay.
near you and stuff. And
Yeah.
they're kind of, they self-taught themselves everything. It's like, where'd that spark come to? It's like, hey, let's film this. Like,
Yeah.
why that?
So I've just always been the guy to document everything. I think I started my YouTube channel when I was like 12 years old. And at first it wasn't even fishing. I used to skateboard around with my friends. So it'd be all over the places filming each other, skateboarding. And then it kind of transitioned for me, like stopping skating. I just revamped the whole channel and then I went into fishing. So I've just always been the guy to just document everything. I think it'll be pretty cool, like in the future, whether I'm with my kids or my wife, I can look back and just see myself grow,
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, man. I've known a couple people that started a YouTube channel like quite a ways back, and just seeing how they've grown so much and all the different avenues that it's taken them down in life. So I mean, there's no telling where it'll go for you. So
Yeah,
that's pretty, it's
exactly.
pretty crazy. So, but being over there in Florida, you were talking about how easy access is to deeper water and stuff like that. Like what are all some of the bigger style type of fish that you catch? I mean, I know you catch a lot of tuna and mahi and stuff. I mean, do y'all get the chance to go after like yellowfin tuna and stuff, or you have to still go out quite a ways for
So
them?
We don't really have a yellowfin fishery here. It's more of a thing where a lot of the guys who kite fish for the sailfish, like here and there, like these guys will randomly catch a yellowfin. But our primary tuna fishery here is blackfins.
Blackfin, yeah.
Yeah. And then out on the edge, we have, pretty much everything: mahi, sailfish, wahoo, blackfins, just A lot of fish out
Yeah.
here.
It's crazy that you
Yeah.
can get wahoo in so stinking close, man, 'cause I mean that's one of probably everybody's favorite fish to eat and to catch.
My first wahoo was about 5 miles offshore of Miami
Yeah.
on my Sea-Doo. Yeah, the first one I ever saw, first one I ever
Nice.
caught. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, we had one day off of Galveston. So we have like the salt domes out near the shelf, so they're about 85 to 100 miles out. And one of the big areas we fish for wahoo over here is called the Flower Gardens. It's a national marine sanctuary. And in the wintertime, they go to spawn. They come from all over the Gulf and spawn over there. And we were out there 1 year. It's the only year I've ever got to go during the spawn. But I remember us trolling, and all we were catching were kingfish, just massive kingfish, one after the other.
Yeah.
And then, like, somebody turned the light switch off, the kingfish bite died, and the wahoo started biting. And all we
This
caught
went
was wahoo for
crazy.
like probably about an hour and a half. I think we caught 11 and a half wahoo.
One of them got
But one of them
shark.
got on a buoy and
Oh,
got tagged by a cuda. And
wow.
those 11 and a half fish, I think, ended up weighing like 550 pounds total. So, I mean, they were
Wow.
massive.
And that's another thing about over there in the Gulf. Like a lot of your fish are just huge
Yeah.
compared to over here. Like where we have access to a lot of fish, you know, but like the size of the fish is really different than over there in the Gulf.
Well, they say everything's bigger in Texas. So, but we do. You know, now I do a we have quite a few party boats over here, so that have
Okay.
switched over doing a lot of the overnight yellowfin tuna trips and stuff. And because we have a really good yellowfin fishery over here, you just have to go out a long ways. I mean,
Yeah.
110 to 150 miles is the average length you got to go out. And but we started doing some private trips, just with some smaller groups, even more so than what they normally take, and going a little bit further. And I mean, we're targeting fish, you know, 100 plus pounds. I mean, that's basically what we're looking for. And in the
Yeah.
last 2 years, it's been insane. I mean, we're going like in December, and the fishing is just unreal. But you know, it's mostly like drift fishing and stuff. You know, we're throwing
Yeah.
large like Halco lures and top waters and doing some chunking and stuff. Do y'all do a lot of chunking over there, or is it most? I know most of what you do is lure, like jigging and
Yeah, I
throwing.
do a lot of live baiting. Just like basically just fishing certain depths, just putting out live baits. A lot of trolling, a lot of jigging, and then deep dropping. But I do know right over there in the Bahamas where they do run to get the yellowfin, they do a lot of chunking and then finding the birds on the radar and running up on them and pitching baits at them and stuff like that. Yeah.
That's really cool. And that's one thing, like, there's not a lot of people do that over here. It's like, you know,
Yeah.
chasing birds and stuff. But when I interviewed Emily and Amanda Gale, I mean, they were talking about that, how they use their radar. I mean, their whole boat and stuff set up and
Yeah,
everything for
yeah,
that. So it's pretty
yeah.
incredible. I know you're doing a lot of these trips. Are you going every year? Are you going multiple times a year over the Bahamas, or and how the heck does that work?
The first time I ever went, it was a Sea-Doo trip. We ran out of Stuart, Florida to the Abaco Islands, 112 miles. That trip, it was me and Cam. He's also on the Sea-Doo team. Great diver.
Nice.
It was me and him on separate Sea-Doos, and then we had a camera boat with us, and we documented the whole trip. We got the perfect weather gap. It was just awesome day, awesome trip. And then this year was the first year I've done it with just me and two other friends on Sea-Doos, going from Miami to Bimini, which is 50 miles.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
So
haul.
it's definitely, you know, ballsy, but as long as you take the right precautions, you plan it out. You have your VHF radios, you have your EPIRBs, your CTO membership, and you have everything together, and the weather complies. It could be a very, very, very fun trip.
Yeah, I mean, because I imagine 50 miles, you're probably still getting over there in what, just a little over an hour, hour and a half, something
So
like that.
on a flat, calm morning, you could easily get there in about an hour and a half to 2 hours. If you have any type of weather that turns up on you, it could turn into like 4 hours. But yeah.
That's crazy. And so what do you have to do like before you go, as far as like getting in the country over there and docking and all that stuff?
So where we stayed, we stayed at an Airbnb that it's literally, we rode from Miami right across, and the place we stayed was Bimini Cove. And the entrance of their marina is just right in from where we were running. So we went right in there. We docked up, just got all our stuff from the Airbnb, and then we ran over to immigration and customs. And just, you have to prepare all the paperwork. They have it on the website where you can just see everything you need to have, pay your fees, get your fishing license, and then hanging out in Bahamas fishing. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah. So awesome. And it seems like there's a lot of people doing that now.
Yeah. And even completely like not related to fishing at all, there's a bunch of people that just love to take that trip on jet skis general.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Probably not as many on jet skis as boats, but yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely
yeah.
get more and more popular. So yeah, cool, man. Sure. So how did your relationship with Sea-Doo come about? I mean, is it just,
every single one of my sponsors right now has just been through posting my videos.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, yeah.
That's really cool.
Sea-Doo reached out to me just from them seeing my videos, and same thing with Extra Tough and Salt Life. So it's just all been me just being consistent, hammering out videos and forming relationships that way.
Yeah. Yeah. How many times do you try to drop new stuff? You dropping every day, multiple times a week, or kind of what's your method on that front?
So right now I do like twice a week. I know earlier this year I was just doing like a posting spree where I was just going through all of my long form content, because as you know, recently short form content has become absolute gold. So I started going through all of my long form stuff and just making short form content out of that. And then I went on like a 30-day posting spree where every single day I was just posting a video.
Yeah.
And that's actually where I saw my growth from about 8,000 followers to now I'm at 150,000 since January.
Isn't that crazy?
So yeah. The power of social media is insane, honestly. Yeah,
it is crazy. Yeah. Nobody knew what it was 10, 12 years ago, and now.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's weird how the short stuff, me and my buddy talk about it all the time, because he's doing lots of YouTube shorts and stuff now. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's getting 10 times the amount of looks on those, you know. And it's just like reels on Instagram. I've noticed through promoting like my charter and stuff, like I can get so much more reach making a reel
on Instagram,
putting it on Instagram YouTube? And and getting tons of interaction.
Yeah, YouTube is definitely the hardest platform for me. That's especially with the long form content. It can be, because sometimes you go out there, you catch one fish, you know, and it could be hard to make a full day out of that, like tell a story out of just catching one fish, you know. But short form is just awesome because I can turn one moment into something, into a piece of content, you know.
Yeah, that's why everybody thinks like all these fishing shows that are on TV and everything is like, oh man, they just go out and catch all these fish. It's like, man, that could have taken multiple days or all day.
Exactly.
Like I had the luck. Me and my wife were on Ronnie Green's Fishing Story show back in 2018, and we had the worst luck of weather ever on the day we filmed. Like we got to our spot, it was beautiful, and then crack thunder and lightning, and we were stuck over on the other side of the bay for like 3.5 hours in a rainstorm inside a restaurant that didn't have power. And we didn't even catch a fish for that show until like almost 6 o'clock that night. And then we caught a whole bunch in like 30 minutes and had enough for the whole show, you know.
Wow.
And it was crazy because I was like, well, what do we do if we don't catch you?
Exactly.
Like, there's no show.
And that's another thing with just, you know, like doing big video projects and stuff like that. You're putting a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of preparation into a trip, and you don't know if the fish are going to comply with you.
Exactly.
You know, so it can be very stressful for sure.
Yeah, from a guide standpoint, that's like the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah,
I've
I've seen like memes on Instagram of guides just saying like the night before trips they can't sleep because they're just worried about getting their clients on fish.
Yeah. And we had just this last weekend, man, I had several trips and we had 2 days back to back. And the first day we went out and it was tough. Like we went to probably 10 different spots and had a handful of fish. And then the next day I went out and the wind forecast was completely different. Not what it was forecast to be, super nice. And we still went out and checked the day where we were the previous day. And I stopped at a spot. I didn't even feel real confident that we were going to get much there. And we started catching fish as we got there. And literally we fished two spots all day and had a great time. And every trip's different. Yeah. I mean, you know that. So you don't know if you don't go. So
exactly. Yep.
But that's cool, true. Man. So I know you posted something a while back about you were part of this about the YouTubes, the Black Voices thing, or what was that all about?
So it's basically YouTube YouTube, like, it was actually like an application I did. I completely forgot about it.
Uh-huh.
And then one day I woke up, saw it in my email. And basically it's just a big community of creators that YouTube like handpicked based on the info you submitted. And they put us through a series of basically courses on how to upgrade your YouTube channel, upgrade your content, upgrade your relationships with brands.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, for the ending ceremony, they flew us all out to Africa.
Yeah, that looked awesome. I bet that was pretty crazy.
A lot of fun. Yeah, definitely. Well,
yeah, that's cool, man. And just think, I've gotten the fortune and had the luck to meet and go to a lot of cool places just because of fishing. I mean, it's crazy what a small passion growing up as a kid, you know, fishing with your dad, what that's caused. And never thought I'd be doing a podcast. I mean, I've talked to people on TV I've watched since I was a little kid, and it's just weird.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I know, I know you like to cook too, and I know you've integrated that into a lot of your videos and stuff. And mm-hmm. and is that something that you want to make a bigger part of it, or is it? I mean, people like seeing that stuff. Like a lot of people ask me that. The first thing they ask me is like, "How do I cook this? I've caught it, you know, what the heck am I supposed to do?" And I was like, well, a skillet and some butter and seasoning. Yeah.
Exactly. Go YouTube it. So I really enjoy bringing home fish, cleaning it up, preparing it, sharing it with my family, eating it. So I was always just like, why not add that to the videos, you know? And then especially with the short form stuff, just seeing how much people enjoyed seeing that whole process. I was like, wow. But I don't know if I want to make it too big, because I just like the fact that I can catch something fresh mm-hmm. and cook it. But it's like outside of fish or any type of seafood, I'm not the biggest cooker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
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 I like cooking my catch.
Yeah. I get the problem where I go home. It's like I'm from Oklahoma originally. And so, man, when I moved down here, and I would go back home and take all this exotic fish we never had growing up, you know, tuna and snappers and all these shrimp and everything. And they're like, and my parents would look at me like, I'm not touching it. It's like, I don't know how the heck to cook this. So, you know, inevitably I had to cook everything. And, and still, I think today I get on to him because it's like, hey, you got this in the freezer still? He's like, well, we were just waiting for you to come back, you know? And I was like, don't be afraid of it. It's not hard. So, can't go wrong with any seasonings usually on some fresh fish. So,
but that is true.
Yeah,
that is true. You don't have to do much to it.
Yeah. So, what's your favorite way to fix fish? I mean, you like grilling it, blacking, like making ceviche.
I think some of the best fish I've ever had has been wahoo and tuna, seared.
Yeah,
you know, where you have the middle still raw and the outsides have a nice sear on it, like hitting it with the soy sauce. And I think that's some of the best fish I've had. But can't go wrong with like fried grouper, fried dolphin, or like a grouper made with a nice sauce.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of good ways to go, you know.
So I know you do mostly everything offshore. Have you done much inshore fishing this year at all? I mean, do you do anything like that? I mean, on the jet ski or out with friends and stuff, or
not really. I know, like, a lot of times when I'm on shoots, we'll do inshore days and stuff like that. But myself, no, I don't really do much inshore at all.
Like the blue water.
Just fascinated with just being offshore, not knowing what you're gonna hook, you know?
Have you ever done any like tarpon fishing or anything like that over there or?
I have caught tarpon. I've done tarpon fishing, just not on the Sea-Doo. Just like with friends randomly on their boat sometimes.
That's crazy. We had a really good tarpon season for the guys that were doing it this summer, and there's still a few here for sure. But I've seen probably more fish this summer over here off of Galveston than I have in several years, and it kind
Really?
of ebbs and flows with the number of fish we get coming up from Mexico and stuff, and how far up they come and stuff. But people get excited. I mean, I 2 weeks ago, I mean, I had tarpon swimming all around our big work boat when we were out offshore getting
Really?
snails, and they were just rolling everywhere in about 50 foot of water, and it's pretty cool.
I've actually been offshore, and I was in about 1,000 feet of water. That day we were deep dropping. So a lot of times when I'm out there deep dropping, I'm down there fishing on the bottom, but I also have baits on the surface just out there if a dolphin wants to swim up. So we're out there, we just finished up deep dropping. I think we caught like a yellow edge grouper that day. And then we're just running around to weed patches, just venturing further and further offshore. And my cousin who was with me the day, he goes, "Yo, I just saw something jump out there." So we start flying up to this patch. And obviously we think it's dolphin. Once we got to the spot, like right next to the patch, you just see thousands of massive tarpon, massive ones.
In 1,000 feet
And
of water.
in 1,000 feet of water, crystal clear blue water. I have videos of them coming out and rolling right next to weed patches. We threw flare hawks at them, we threw squid at them, we threw swim baits at them. They wouldn't eat it. And then after I came in and shared the video, a lot of people told me I'm not really familiar with the migration, but it's some type of big migration that's actually pretty rare to get on camera. So
That's pretty
it was
cool.
definitely pretty cool. And they were massive.
That is crazy, man. Yeah, you never hear about tarpon being that far offshore, but you know, we have a big fishery for flounder over here, and which you don't hear a lot of out of Florida. I mean, you hear people catching them, but not targeting them like over here. Like we have a huge fishery for them, and but we don't know much about their spawning. We know they spawn offshore primarily because they're going out the passes, and most of them start getting caught in bigger numbers this time of year. But you know, there's data showing that those fish are going out and spawning like 100 miles out. It's like, how do you track something like that?
A
You can't.
hundred
Like
miles.
you can't follow that. So that's why there's not a lot of data on those fish. And it's kind of weird you bring that up about the tarpon being so far offshore, because we all think of them as a shallow water inshore species.
Exactly. And a lot of people were like, "That's not 1,000 feet of water." And I'm just like, "Man,
Yeah, I know where I was.
I can't explain it." You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's just
that's
stuff you
crazy.
see out there
Yeah, we had
for sure.
one of the, I guess it's probably been about 3, maybe 4 years ago, one of the party boats that my buddy runs that we do the tuna fishing on, they were out like 150 miles out, and had a whole pod of killer whales come up on them out in the middle of the Gulf. And he said there were killer whales, and they made national news. They were on all the news channels and everything. And I've always been told that they're here in the Gulf and stuff. And but I've never seen video like that. I mean, it was nuts, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
now that's
there was probably hundreds of them. So
hundreds.
yeah, he said they were as far as you could see, and they were all around the boat, just swimming with the boat coming in. It was unreal. You can go find their videos on YouTube, I'm sure. Just look up Texas killer whales or orcas or something, but yeah, you never know what you're going to come across out there.
There was some spotted here in Key Largo this year as well as in the Bahamas.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, and I know that's not normal for here either.
And we've had a lot of people, bluefin tuna spawn in the Gulf, and we've had a lot of people targeting, and the state record's been broken several times the last few years because more and more people are. I mean, they build these
Starting to
boats.
do
More and more
it.
boats can go out there now and target, you know, way out offshore and get there a lot quicker. These big center consoles now, and And I mean, they're catching these 600, 700, 800 pound tunas. And I don't know what that would be like. I mean, I've battled the tuna, a yellowfin that was probably 165 pounds for over an hour and a half. Eventually lost the fish. Just because it pulled the hook. It was a trio of errors by some people on the party boat that I was on as far as gaffing it. And I don't want to go down that road because it's bad memories.
So, but wait. The fish got to the boat?
Oh, I got to the boat three times and we couldn't get a gaff in it. So, but I won't mention any names, but but it was like painful. 3 o'clock in the morning, too. So, but yeah, when we seen the fish, it was massive. I mean, it's the only one I know for sure that I've had on that had sickles, you know, and that's always the goal is catch one that big. And it was a monster, and he ate right by the boat on a frenzy flying fish. And so it was cool, man. I'll never forget that fish. I mean, that fish haunts me probably forever. So
gotta go and get a bigger one.
I know. Right. But yeah, so, but I mean, that's like I said, you just never know all the different experiences you'll see out there and stuff. But do y'all get many triple tail down where y'all are at?
So there's an area they fish. It's more of an inshore thing.
Yeah.
Like Florida, what is it? Everglades National Park, where they catch triple tail in there. And then sometimes we'll see them offshore, like floating on a piece of debris or a weed patch. I don't see them a whole lot, but I have seen them.
Yeah, they're cool. That's probably one of my favorite fish to target.
Yeah, they're a cool fish.
So, yeah, I wish we had them all year, but we just mostly just in summertime. So,
really,
but so what are like since your following is growing and that kind of thing, and you're getting to do all this more stuff? Like, what's your kind of goals for the little bit of future? I mean, have you got big plans, or I mean, what are you kind of thinking of doing here with everything you got going on?
I really just right now just want to keep growing and just kind of seeing where it takes me, you know. I couldn't have pictured what's going on right now to be going on, so I'm just kind of taking it easy, still doing what I'm doing. Just want to grow the brand, keep fishing, explore new places, push boundaries. And my main thing would be just chasing giant fish that people chase on boats and doing it on a sea-doo. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah. Well, hopefully maybe we can get you over here sometime. We'll chase some cobia and we get a lot of tuna in the summer, you know, about the 40, 50 mile range out of this part of Texas and stuff, and lots of mahi. So it always surprised me how many mahi we have over here. Never really thought about that, you know, before, but we have a ton of them. So, but that's cool. And
yeah,
and
that'd be awesome.
I'm sure, you know, like just the grassroots growth of these things. I mean, just doing what you're doing, putting out quality, family friendly content. And that's a big plus these days. Being able to find something that kids can follow and look at and not have to worry about, you know, what they're watching and stuff. And
for sure.
There's a lot of people out there that don't really care. Yeah, there's a lot of crap out there, a lot of stuff that people don't care who watches it and that kind of thing.
And
But it's good to see people like you and doing that. That's why I started following you. And I've talked to several people over here that have followed you, and hopefully we'll get some more out with this podcast coming out. So
for sure.
But your brand is I Belong Outdoors, right? It's what your channel outdoors, and everything. Yeah. So how'd you get, did you just come up with that, or?
That was literally just something. My sister plays a big role and everything I do, just on the back and like handling emails, helping me keep my brain organized, just handling partnerships. So one day we were just brainstorming and she was like, I Belong Outdoors. And I was like, that sounds perfect.
Nice.
So that's how I came up with. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, I'll do all this. You stay outside.
and that's another thing. Like, that is a huge help. Cause I'm just able to focus on fishing, you know?
Yeah. That's cool. Having all of the other
stuff. Yeah, for sure. Especially from like my sister, someone you could trust, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And, One day, hopefully, I'll have somebody to help me do some of the stuff that we got going on. But me and my wife tag team on a bunch of stuff together. But the
That's
podcast
awesome.
Is kind of my deal right now. So, it's funny because I talked to a lot of people who have podcasts and things, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I record the shows, and then I just have somebody else do everything else, the
yeah,
editing."
Yeah, they
it's
have
like,
someone else edit it.
So you don't even know what's going to come out.
Yeah. And I mean, I edit all of my stuff. I'm in charge of editing, but just the emails and staying organized with the dates and deadlines and stuff like that, I need someone to help me with stuff like that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So was this summer the first year you've been to ICAST, or was that, have you been up there several times?
That was my first time ever to ICAST.
Yeah. It's a cool show, man. I meet so many cool people there. And if you're into fishing, you ever get the chance to go to that show, I mean, it's definitely no brainer to go and check it out. So, and
I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't even know that it wasn't open to the general public.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. So after being able to hang out there and seeing how it goes, it was definitely super, super sick.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a, everybody's going 90 miles an hour, and I've been to that show a lot over the years, and you still can't see everything even in 3 days being there on the show floor. Like, I'll go in with like 2 pages of lists of people to talk to or things to go check out, and I usually make through about half of it. You get sidetracked with newer stuff and stop and look and talk to people. But it's cool, man. And this year was good because this was like the first year probably since COVID that it's been like 100% back to the way it was before. Cause a couple years before this one, it was not near as busy as far as traffic and just booths there. So there, you know, I guess we're back to somewhat normal lives.
Thank God.
In business, even though you still can't get a lot of stuff. So did that affect you much in what you were doing when COVID hit, as far as being able to go?
I know like COVID was a terrible time for a lot of people. But during COVID, when everything was pretty much shut down, there was nothing to do. I actually went to EMT school. I went to paramedic school. I had 3 months left to go and do, fire school to become a full-on firefighter paramedic here.
Yeah.
And when COVID hit, I was in my fourth semester of paramedic school, and they're pretty much like, "Hey guys, we can't go to class right now. We're going to do everything online. So just come online. We're not doing any clinicals right now. So just do all your work online." So that was the time where I really, really, really dug into fishing and making videos. And by the time COVID kind of simmered down, I was doing what I'm doing full blown now and realize that I would rather fish, you know?
Yeah.
So
you think you'll ever go back and finish that, or?
I don't think so. Yeah. I love fishing. You know what I mean? And I feel like everyone's dream, well, not everyone's dream, but most fishermen's dream is to just be able to fish for a living. So I think right now I'm able to do what I love. So
amen.
I don't want to do anything else.
Yeah. All the power to you. And
yeah,
kind of make up your own schedule and put out you know what you want to put out and stuff. So that's pretty cool. So, well, trying to think, have you got any like big fishing trips planned for the rest of this year, or how does kind of the winter factor in over there where you're at? Does it slow you down much? As far as, I mean, weather's obviously an issue, but does your fishing styles change that much, or do the fish, I mean?
I feel like the style of fishing doesn't change too much. It's just super hard to get out in the water with all the wind we got.
Yeah.
As far as big trips go, I don't really have anything big planned for the rest of this year, at least.
Yeah.
I know my next two goals are to catch either a big yellowfin, a big bluefin, or either a black or blue marlin on the Sea-Doo.
Yeah.
So those are my things next. I don't have a date on them or anything, or even where I'm going to do them, but that is something I want to do.
Well, I know one of the things I was wanting to ask you was, one of your big things this year was to get your swordfish. And I know you got close to Texas. You came over to Venice.
Yeah.
How did that whole thing unfold?
So Since the first day I was fishing on a Sea-Doo, and I couldn't stop watching YouTube videos. I was just obsessed with everything about offshore. And obviously, here in Florida, the broadbill fishery is a big thing. So I was like, man, could you imagine I catch one of those on a Sea-Doo? And I've been telling my friends this for years. I'm like, man, one day I'm gonna do this, one day I'm gonna do this, one day I'm gonna do this. And then as time progressed, just being able to spend more time on the water, just really hone in on my craft, because it's not easy to do all of the stuff I do out there. I know sometimes on video it could look super easy, but just getting comfortable, trying different things, trolling, deep dropping, it's like a lot of time, a lot of effort goes into those things. So after time, like really getting everything together, I was like, I think I'm ready, man. So I reached out to Captain Blake, who I've just seen him on Instagram a bunch. I know a lot of people have went out fishing with him. He's always on him, and I was like, man, you're always on swordfish. Here in Florida, we deal with a lot of current. We're out there in the Gulf Stream. I would have to keep the ski moving forward, also focusing on my rod. So that really turned me away from doing it here just because of how difficult it could be. And he was down for it. We teamed up, went out there, got baits out. The first half of the day, we were fishing and not a bite. Like, not a bite. And we were just like, oh, because we came over on one day, the next day we fished, and the next day we planned to leave. That was a plan. So we had one day to make it happen. And after about, I think, the fourth hour, my ear pod fell out. After about the fourth hour, we just got stumped. And there it goes, that we're tied on the fish and we're cranking on them, cranking on them, cranking on them. And it's literally like it was just meant to be. The way the fish just swam right up to the ski, did a couple runs, didn't jump once, no nothing, came right up. And once I saw him, I literally could not fathom what was going on. My heart was beating out of my chest. I'm
Oh no,
screaming at
I watched the video
Sebastian.
again yesterday of y'all catching it. It was crazy.
It was a lot of emotions, a lot of, high energy, but happy it happened. It
That's
was awesome.
a big accomplishment, I mean, catching one regardless is a big accomplishment for anybody, and doing it on a limited capacity on a Sea-Doo as far as like space and like you're talking about, like being able to maneuver and just getting the baits down there, in 1,000, 1,500 to even 2,000 feet. I mean, that's hard to do. Like you can't just drop it and sit there and wait for it to hit the bottom. Like
And
you, I mean, it seems like a lot of the guys over
here,
here, I mean, they have to drop them and sit there and almost just drive in a circle and kind of, let it get down and then hold the boat in the right spot is so hard.
And here, in Florida, it's primarily electric reels that everyone's doing it on. But over there in the Gulf of Mexico, because of how little current there was versus here, we're able to hand crank it.
Hand
So
crank
that
it.
was another huge plus, because we were, locked in with that fish cranking on them, doing all the work.
I've never caught one. I fished for him a couple times, but I had a lot of friends over here that target swordfish a lot, and that's the one thing that I hear them telling everybody, and the people ask me, I'll tell them is like, when you're sitting there and you're trying to catch this giant fish, and you're looking at the rod and they're like, yeah, the rod's only gonna move about like that.
Yeah, just exactly. And it's a real subtle bite, So I've only ever caught two swords. My first trip ever, I went with one of my homies, Ray, and we got one, my first trip ever. Since then, I've been on a couple trips, haven't seen one. And then the trip on the Sea-Doo was the second time I got one.
That's so cool. Did you save the bill? No.
I didn't.
I see a lot of people
I
saving them, getting
didn't.
them painted and different things like that, but it's just a goal for your next one. So, heck
I
yeah,
want
man.
like a real, real big one,
I don't know, like I see like Nick Stanzik and down there in the Keys and catching all these giant swordfish and stuff all the time, and I think the size Average size swords over here, pretty comparable with what they're getting there, you know, like out of Bud and Mary's and stuff. But we've had some big fish hooked over here that were probably pushing that 800-900 even bigger mark. And there's one boat over here, the Booby Trap, and I think RJ Boyle was over here with them, or maybe it was Nick was over here fishing with them. And I remember them hooking one and fighting it for like literally like 20 hours or something crazy. It was nuts. And they just could never get it up. Yeah. So I don't know, who knows if it was tail hooked or something, but you think it would have died and come up being that long. But
yeah,
man, there's some big fish in the ocean. So yeah, if they and didn't
I,
get big,
I think our, exactly. I think our state record is like 760 pounds or something like that.
That's a monster.
But that's a massive fish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's incredible. That's incredible. So, well, who knows, man? Maybe you'll get to go up to Alaska or something someday and do some fishing up there. I seen, didn't you go out to, was it Lake Powell or something like that?
You had
some cool videos from that trip.
Yeah. So I forgot when that was. It was either 2022 or 2021 where I went over. I fished with Bob from Up Lake Adventures. Mm-hmm. And he's stationed right there in Big Water, Utah.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much like right there on the border of Arizona, Page. So we were out there on Lake Powell just going way, way, way up the lake, catching stripers, smallmouth bass. We saw a bunch of carp, and for me, it was pretty much the landscape that was just mind blowing.
Yeah, it's beautiful over there.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So that's cool, man. Getting to do all this cool stuff and everything. So, well, tell us where everybody can find you, how they can follow you and stuff, and stay up to date with what you got going on.
Sweet. So my Instagram is Emmanuel, EmmanuelW_. My YouTube channel is I Belong Outdoors. And my TikTok is Eman Belongs Outdoors.
Belongs Outdoors, sweet.
And I'm always posting long form, short form pictures, all my adventures.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know we've been trying to get this done for a few months since we ran into each other over there, but we finally got it done. And, you know, I look forward to seeing what you do in the future. I mean, I know the future's bright, and you're going to be making a big impact in the fishing industry and beyond through your work. So keep up the good work. Have you got any last words or words of encouragement for a younger kid or something coming up trying to get into this?
So I know a lot of people ask me just how do I do what I do, and honestly, I wouldn't say I definitely planned. I've always wanted, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, I'd love to be a huge YouTuber, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But until I really found something that I liked, and being consistent wasn't a problem. Being passionate wasn't a problem. I'm not trying to find content. I'm not like trying to create moments to make content. You know, I'm just
living
everything
in the moment.
You see is just exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I would say that would be my main advice, is find something that you're passionate about, that you actually love. Don't do stuff for views. Do stuff because you actually like it, and the rest will come together.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Just let it come to you. It's going to happen. So
for sure.
That's cool, man. Yeah. Well, cool, Emmanuel. Well, we appreciate it. And I'll be posting links to all your social accounts and the show notes and everything for everybody to check out. And I'll attach a couple of your videos on there, especially the swordfish one too, so they can check that out and follow along on the ride. So, all right, man. Well, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Slow down, mama, why you talk so mean? Good Lord, man, shit, it ain't what it seems. You got nice clothes, late night shows, boogie down at the bar. Fiddle tunes and homemade booze, but it always goes too far. Shooting pool, crack a jack, take
go now and don't look back, but hey, don't you wanna play? Hold on, sugar, why you look so sad? Come on now, mama, ain't nothing here so bad. You got fast cars, movie stars, party on downstream. With Mary Jane, good cocaine, lay me down there to eat. Double down, throw some dice, take off now, don't think twice. But hey, now don't you want to play? Baby, go on. I don't work down there anymore. No, I don't. Get back, get on track, jump on, ride this thing. Double down, roll the dice, take off now, don't think twice. Hey, don't you wanna play? Say hey.
Anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know, right here at Hawk's Cay.
Oh, that's awesome.
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.